All right, let's get going. So we left off last time. Welcome back, everybody. But we left off the last time with a conversation about primarily Iri Kli Rishon, Iri Mi Kli Rishon, pouring out of a Kli Rishon, and some of the different ramifications of that stage of the cooking process, what it is considered cooking for, what it's not considered cooking for, some kulos, some chumros. So now as we move further, and we certainly dabbled in coffee making last time, and we certainly dabbled in other aspects of a Kli Sheni. So we'll see it there now in the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa. Before we do, one very, very important word about the notion of mixing hot water and cold water together that really does still pertain to what we were talking about last week with the topic of Irui Mikli Rishon, pouring out of a Kli Rishon, and the impact that that has when we're talking about mixing together liquids, or let's assume water, hot and cold water together, varying temperatures, hot to cold, cold to hot. Let's take a look. Very, very important, very practical stuff that really comes up all the time. So we'll go to Nun Aleph. Mutter l'shpoch mayim chamim. It is mutter to pour hot water, afilu mitoch kli rishon ha'omid agave ha'esh, even directly from a kli rishon that is standing on the fire. Remember, this might talk about in a very classical sort of setting where you have a pot that's literally on the fire, literally on the stove or on the blech, and you're tilting it, you're tipping it while it's still on the fire, and you're pouring it out. It may well also talk about, in a more contemporary context, using an urn. An urn is, of course, something that is al gabe ha'esh. It is right on the fire because it's connected to the heating element, it's connected to the heating coil, and you are drawing water, either pumping water or opening the spigot in order to get water directly from that kli, directly from that vessel, while it still stands on the fire. So let's talk about that case where you're drawing hot water, and you can do so. Into a vessel, into a cup or a mug that has cold water, as long as it's mayim karim merubim, as long as there is a significant amount of mayim karim, a significant amount of cold water, b'tanai, on condition, as long as that cold water doesn't heat up to such a degree by means of the introduction of the hot water therein, so that the final product ends up being yad soledes. What's the idea? The idea is that as much as we might get involved and embroiled in questions and considerations of, is it a Kli Rishon? Is it a Kli Sheni? What level of Bishul is this? Is this real Bishul, or is it a few steps removed from Bishul? Remember, one of the questions we always need to ask ourselves is, are we even dealing with Yad Soledes? Because if we're not talking about Yad Soledes, certainly when it comes to, either when it comes to liquids or to solids, but when the only criterion for determining whether or not water is considered to be, or liquid in general is considered to be cooked, is whether or not it is cold or hot. So the question remains, the question becomes, is it actually Yad Soledes? And if it's not Yad Soledes, then we don't necessarily need to be concerned. We'll see a little bit more in the next halacha question from Moriah. How are we going to find out the actual temperature of the water? Is it a ratio of hot water to cold water? It's a good question. And therefore, proceed with caution. Be very, very careful. Be very, very careful. Because the fact of the matter is, it's not so easy to determine. But let's make it really, really obvious, right? Where you have just a little bit of hot water that you're pouring into real cold water. So in that situation where it's, and again, it's all coming in at once, that'll become more clear in the next halacha, where it's all coming in at once. It's not that you're adding a little bit at a time. Really, in this case, where you're going from the hot to the cold, it's relevant. But if you are introducing hot water sufficient cold water that you know it's not going to be out to let this, you know it's not going to get up to, you know, close to 100 degrees, 98 degrees, whatever it is, you know that it's going to be significantly less than that. So then you don't have to be concerned. So let's say you're drinking, you know, a glass of cold water, and it's just a little bit too cold. It's just a little too cold, and you want to just bring it closer to room temperature. You know that if you put in a small little dousing of hot water, that's not really going to change the temperature. It's certainly not going to bring it up to Yad Soledes. That would be mutter to do on Shabbos. So first and foremost, is it going to be Atzilus? If it's not going to be Atzilus, you don't really have Bishul on your hands in the first place. You don't then need to get so embroiled in the whole question of Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni and all of that. And the opposite is also true, although we have to be a little bit more careful. And sorry for, again, my translations, I was learning this my first year in yeshiva. Some of them I noticed are wrong. But at any rate, we'll deal with it as we come to it. So you could also pour cold water into a vessel, into a mug, let's say, that already contains hot water. Again, you got to be very, very careful, even more careful here. Gam im halalu nisunim b'kli rishon, even if you're putting it into a kli rishon, you could obviously never put cold water into a vessel that's on the fire, because if it's on the fire, the question is not only one of what is the current temperature right now after it's poured in, the question is also what temperature will it ultimately get up to. So because it's sitting on the fire, that cold water obviously is going to start to cook at some point, therefore it's usher to do that from the very, very outset. However, if it's off the fire, even if it's a Kli Rishon, and you're pouring in cold water, if you're pouring in such an abundance of cold water that it's going to completely overtake the temperature of the hot water, and it's going to significantly lower the temperature of the hot water, the entire concoction is not going to get up to Yad Toledes, so then it would be mutter to do so. But tonight, as long as Sheishpoch Mayim Karim B'mida, degree, it's not what it means. Mayim Karim B'mida She'ela Lo Yischamamu, as long as you don't pour in such an amount, such a quantity to that you don't pour in to such a degree. It's not talking about the actual degree of temperature, but you don't pour in such a that as long as you pour in such a quantity, you have to be very, very cautious again that the cold water that you're pouring in is not brought up to Yad Toledes. So if you have a cup of hot tea and it's a we'll talk about a klisheni afterwards. Let's say you have a tea kettle, right, that was sitting on the black from before Shabbos and actually was heated, right? So it's been heated, or it's being heated in that kettle. You then bring that to the table. It's just a little too hot, perhaps. So you want to pour in some cold water. That wouldn't be acceptable if you're only slightly lowering the temperature of the entire kli. Because what effectively is happening is that the cold water that you're introducing into the hot water is actually being heated up to a point of Yad Toledes. Okay. V'kasher yishpoch ha-samayim ha-karim. Now, when you pour in the cold water, min hadin, really what you need to be very careful about, she'akpid lishpoch osam bevas achas. You have to pour in all at once, v'lo le'at le'at, and not a little bit at a time. What's the problem with pouring it in a little bit at a time instead of dumping in the whole quantity all at once? The issue is as follows, so that the hot water that's already residing in the kettle, lo yaspiku lahachemes chelkam harishon shel hamayim hakarim. If you're pouring it in a little bit at a time, just a very, very slow and steady stream, what's happening is that every small bit of cold water that first lands into that hot water is being brought up to Yad Toledes, until slowly but surely, in slow motion, you know, many, many, many seconds later, many nanoseconds even later, it only at that point then finally cools down. Now, there may be something to be said for if you really slow everything, that you really looked at this under a microscope or the equivalent, you really slowed this down tremendously and watched it over an extremely slow speed, that you might find on a molecular level, maybe that's true. That's not something that halacha typically concerns itself with, because bear in mind, that still doesn't resemble an act of actual bishul, which is really the kicker. So the point is, though, you want to make sure, though, at least in terms of general activity, you're pouring all the cold water in at once. If you're pouring in sufficient cold water so that it overwhelms and it overtakes the temperature of the hot water, so that the hot water is no longer Yad Toledes, neither the hot water that's in there nor the final concoction, you just want to make sure that you pour it all in at once so that that's the case, rather than pouring in a little bit at a time. Because if you do, then those first droplets that first hit the water, they may actually be brought up to Yad Toledes until you have compounded enough of them together to then finally overtake the temperature of that Kli Rishon. Okay, so a couple of notes, a couple of important notes, whether going from hot to cold to hot, things to be on the lookout for, but also a very, very important heter when it comes to mixing hot and cold water together. Okay, with that, let's take a look at Klishany again, some of which we've already spoken about, we've already touched upon, but let's keep going here. So Klishany, second Kli again in our contemporary kitchens, what we're probably looking at in most instances is, let's say, going from an urn to a cup of hot water, a mug of hot water, or perhaps from a pot of soup, to a bowl of soup. That bowl of soup, as you mentioned last time, may be considered to be a kli shlishi already, if you look at the ladle as potentially being a kli shani. For most issues, for most purposes, we're going to be looking at that bowl as really being a kli shani. That ladle, since it gets submerged into the pot of soup itself, that ladle then is considered to be part of the pot of soup. Usually when we talk about going from one kli to another kli, kli rishon to shani to shlishi, we're talking about pouring the contents out from the original pot into the next pot, into the next pot, into the next vessel, into the next vessel. Not where you take one vessel and you actually dunk it, you actually submerge it into the prior one. That then becomes part of that original kli, and therefore it'd be hard to separate. So let's assume that the ladle is really part of the kli rishon, bowl of soup, cup of hot water. Those are the types of kelim shniim that we might be talking about. So mikevan sheyeshnam nun gimel. The fact of the matter is, since there are certain things that we assume can be cooked even in a kli shani. And here we get into the issue of trying to differentiate between different types of ingredients and different types of foods. To no small degree, if we, again, let's back up here and think about what bishul is on a definitional sort of level. If what bishul is the introduction of heat that is then being utilized to cause a chemical change in the food that you're preparing, so the amount of heat that's required and the type of vessel that's necessary is going to some degree, depend on the type of food that's actually being heated, meaning to say that foods that are cooked very, very easily, by definition, demand a lesser degree of heat, or to put it in other words, need only be cooked at a stage that is further removed from the fire. So whereas it's not always healthy for us to think about kli rishon, kli sheni, kli shlishi in purely temperature terms, meaning it's not only a matter of how hot is it, and that will give us the ability to determine, well, is it a kli rishon or a kli sheni. Indeed, we may have a scenario in which a kli rishon is a kli rishon because it's been on the fire, and yet the contents of a kli sheni or even a kli shlishi might be hotter than the kli rishon in certain circumstances. That might be the case. But nevertheless, halachically speaking, the further away you get from the original source of heat, the further you move along that continuum of bishul, no longer looks like bishul. However, if we're talking about the kind of food that generally, in terms of the way that you would ordinarily heat it up, in the first place doesn't demand being that close to the source of fire, you would never think to necessarily boil it on the stove. It wouldn't be necessary. Then even as we move further and further away from kli rishon now even into kli sheni, we may well still say that, okay, you can still really cook in the kli sheni with respect to those items. So there are absolutely those items which exist. There are absolutely certain things that can only be cooked in a kli rishon, and there are absolutely other things that still can be cooked in a kli sheni. So what's the problem? Like so many other issues in halacha, we don't know. We don't know the difference. We've lost mesora, we've lost a sense. It's very difficult to identify. You have these sorts of issues all over halacha. It's true of Shabbos, and it's true of Kashrus, and it's true of Safros. It's true of so many different areas of halacha that there is an ideal way that we're supposed to be doing something, that we're supposed to be practicing, and yet because we don't have a mesora for it, it really casts a pale of doubt over the entire process. So this happens in many different, unfortunately, realms of halacha. This is to no small degree a function of galus and being kicked around and not being in one centrally located country altogether with the entirety of the nation. So we lose track of some of these things. And we're also introduced to new things. Especially when it comes to trying to label foods and label ingredients and label animals and, you know, knowing what's what exactly becomes very, very difficult as you're being tossed around and introduced to other cultures and other languages. et cetera, et cetera. You know what the diaspora looks like. So, in anachnu bekim ladas iluhim, we're not really capable of knowing which ones are which. We don't know. We've lost sense. We've lost track of what exactly the Masorah is for what can go into a Kli Rishon and what can only go into a Kli Sheni. Therefore, yesh lahachmir, we should be strict, velomer, and we should say, shekol davar she'eino mevushal, anything that's not already cooked, yesh mishum iser bishal, the iser, the prohibition of bishal still applies, gam b'nisinaso b'chli sheni. Basically, across the board, we'll see this is not exactly true, but basically across the board, what we have to say is that any given food, because we don't really know enough about the various types of foods, what can only be cooked in a Kli Rishon, what can only be cooked in a Kli, or what can still yet be cooked in a Kli Sheni, we basically need to assume that all foods can, at least potentially, be cooked in a Kli Sheni. Im omnam hatav shel shebe Kli Sheni, if indeed the food inside of the Kli Sheni, hu cham b'shi'ur sheyad saledes bo. If we're talking about being placed into a Kli Sheni, where, which is still yad saledes bo. Again, going back to the baseline principle of all of Bishul, if it's not Yad Soledes Bo, then there's no Bishul that's really taking place. So if it's not Yad Soledes, we don't need to make ourselves crazy. Wait a second, this is a Kli Rishon, this is a Kli Sheni. If it's not Yad Soledes, then it's not really Bishul to begin with. But in a scenario in which it is Yad Soledes, let's say you're talking about, again, a bowl of soup, you're talking about a mug of hot water. Water has been drawn out of the Shabbos urn, or soup has been deposited in that bowl. It's a Kli Sheni, but it may well still be piping hot. So it would be Yad Soledes, and therefore we have to assume that you couldn't add anything into this Kli Sheni. L'fikach, therefore, us l'itein beitza b'tavshil shebetzalachas. It would be usher to, let's say, put egg into, let's say, like a bowl of soup, right? Raw egg into a bowl of soup, if that's your thing, if that's what you would want to do. Because if you do, then you are boiling. You're boiling that egg. You're cooking that egg. So if you put something raw into a Kli Sheni, we have to assume that that is absolutely an act of bishul on Shabbos. Now, v'gam kakao ragil, even cocoa, regular cocoa, ale te, tea leaves, hanasunim bisakis, oh, bikapiste, that are placed either in like a teaspoon or like a tea, what do you call those things? You know, the little tea clamp. I forget what you call it, but the small little mesh orb that you put the loose tea inside of, or a tea bag, vale menta, or mint leaves, nana. Right. So if you take any of these things that can be cooked just as easily in a Kli Sheni as they could in a Kli Rishon, kol ela ein la sitam b'chos kishahi Kli Sheni. You can't put any of these things into Kli Sheni, kishahim ena mubushalim, if they haven't already been cooked. V'chein, and similarly, ein li tein plach limon l'soch kos teh kishahu b'chli sheni. You can't put a sliver or a wedge of lemon into a cup of tea if it's a Kli Sheni. Again, even though it's a Kli Sheni, it's not a Kli Rishon. Nevertheless, we assume that things can still be cooked even in a Kli Sheni. So a slice of lemon, a wedge of lemon, has never been cooked before. You put it into even into a Kli Sheni, and that would still be. And that would still be an act of bishul. How did you ever make the tea in the first place? What do you mean tea in a Kli Sheni? How are you able to cook the tea in the Kli Sheni? How could it possibly be a Kli Sheni? Tea essence. Once you have tea essence, the concentrate that you made before Shabbos, and then you use that in a Kli Sheni. So putting a wedge of lemon into the cup would still be aser, even though it's only a Kli Sheni and not a Kli Rishon. So certain exceptions to the rule. Three exceptions. Hold on a second. Let me just check on this. We got a question here. What is ordinary cocoa? Isn't it previously processed cooked? Yes. What we have is processed or cooked. We're going to get back to that. I'm not sure exactly what he means. I think he means some sort of like cocoa powder that's actually raw. It's actually raw and uncooked and unprocessed. Our cocoa, pretty sure, is already cooked. It's already processed and it's already refined. But we'll get into this a little bit more. We spoke about soluble powders last time. We'll go back to that in a minute. Okay, so
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Can I just ask a question? Because I'm intrigued by what you said about how certain foods can be cooked in a cliche and certain foods can't, but we have lost the masora as to which foods that is. Can you speak a little more about that? Like, what do we have? Like, how do we have the concept that there are some foods that can be cooked and some can't? Like, where does that
from the Gemara? From? I mean, the Gemara talks about different things that can be cooked in the Kli Rishon versus cooked in the Kli Sheni, but what precisely they are is lost to us. Look, not unlike, what are kosher birds? Right, so like we know that there are certain birds that are kosher and certain birds that are not kosher. We have a masorah that there are certain birds that are kosher, and we have the names. We have the names of the ones that aren't kosher, but matching them up is challenging. Matching them up is near impossible. And even with other indicators and other simanim that we have to try to identify, well, if it's not a bird of prey and it's more of a docile bird, then probably presume that it's kosher. We certainly don't do that with respect to actually eating different birds. There are prominently the Kamenetskis, but there are others. There are those who will not eat turkey because there is no, the assertion is that there's really no clear masorah that turkey is acceptable. And it can't be because it is native to America. So what could our masorah possibly have been when it comes to a bird that is indigenous to the New World? Presumably what happened is that early Jews came upon, turkey and it looked very, very similar to other kinds of poultry that are certainly acceptable. And it looks like a chicken, and maybe it looks like some other even wild chickens, maybe going back to Europe. But some assert that there's really no clear masorah for turkey, and therefore we shouldn't have it. This may be part of the debate, at least, about things like techeles. Do we have a clear masorah? Even if all signs point to yes, but there isn't necessarily a masorah, so it becomes very, very difficult to assert that absolutely, that this is it. Rav Soloveitchik took that notion sort of to the extreme, specifically when it came to techeles, saying that it's not just a matter of we don't have enough evidence. We don't have enough evidence. So maybe we do have enough evidence. Maybe everything they know today and everything they, and there's a lot more research that's been done even since his passing. Maybe they got it right. But even if they got it right, I mean, even if you knew in your crystal ball that this is absolutely the same techeles as what was worn, he has students who feel otherwise, but he still felt that it shouldn't be worn because effectively we paskin based on Misora. So sometimes it's something, I don't know whether you call that a kula or a chumra. Here it certainly turns into more of a chumra, meaning what the basic properties, that there are things that are so hardy that it's very difficult to cook them in anything that's not a Kli Rishon, and it really needs more of that direct contact with fire or something close to fire, at least water that was boiled directly in fire, not something that was poured out into yet another vessel. And then there are other things that are very, very, those are what we call chomrei habishal. We don't know exactly what the chomrei habishal, we have some indication as to what the kalei habishal are. There are also certain things that the Gemara speaks about as being very, very readily and very easily cooked that we can point to. It's just difficult knowing exactly what's what. So these are, unfortunately, the kinds of things that happen in halach in many different areas. It's true. I mentioned before, it's true of safras. One of the greatest questions on the Tayag Mitzvos that is asked by Rishonim and Achronim is, why is it that we're so lax when it comes to the last one? The final mitzvah of the Torah is to write, is ksiva sefer Torah. It's to write a sefer Torah. So why, how come there are a handful of people who are able to and do and make a point of writing their own Sefer Torah and owning their own Sefer Torah, but by and large, we don't. So why don't we? So some assume it's because, since the Gemara says that we're no longer Bekiyin, we're no longer expert in Maleos v'chaseros. We don't know which words are supposed to be spelled. Male, it does have the Vav, or it's Chaser, it doesn't have the Vav, it has an extra Aleph, it's lacking an Aleph. Since we don't know those things exactly, it's really, not only is that something that's lacking in its ideal form from any sefer that we write, but really, really, maybe there's no such thing as even writing a sefer Torah. meaning because whatever it is that we write is going to somehow or another fall short, and maybe that's something that that largely at least we can rely upon. That shouldn't necessarily dissuade anybody who's interested in writing their own Sefer Torah and owning their own Sefer Torah, but maybe that's something that the rest of us rely upon, that even if we did it, it would be lacking because we've lacked and we've lost Mesorah. So it's the sort of unfortunate reality that kind of winds its way into many, many different areas of halacha. That may have been way more information, and maybe even off the mark from what you're asking, Rivka. But
that was very interesting. I guess my follow up question is what you said about that there are some foods that are kale habishal. I guess do we have any criteria or any kind of context other than just a notion that some foods can be cooked and some foods can't be cooked? I was just wondering if there's any kind of context for
but not clear enough for actual hadracha and for psak. So like, okay. I'll give you
an example. That's why we need to have that piece of the Mesorah that we don't any longer have that would give us more of that context and as to which foods are.
Yeah, I'll give you an example, one that literally should hit close to home, that when it comes to birds, so we do have, there's supposed to be a Mesorah as to how to actually translate the names of the birds that the Torah gives us. Torah gives us a rather short list of all the birds that are Tameh, and all the others are Tahor. And what emerges is that basically birds of prey are Tameh, and other more docile, you know, friendly type birds are tahor. And yet we only have Mesorah for, let's say, a very, very small handful of birds that we actually eat. We eat chicken and we eat duck and we eat turkey, maybe, and we eat goose and we eat pigeon and we eat dove. And I think that's basically, hen and quail, right? So I think that's basically everything that we could possibly eat. When it comes to Shiluach HaKan, we're a little bit more liberal. You can only do Shiluach HaKan on a Tahor bird, right? Because it's tied to the notion of taking the eggs, and you can only take the eggs and use the eggs if it's a Tahor bird. So when it comes to something like a robin or like an oriole, I think even like a cardinals, blue jays, the kinds of things that we see, you know, around the backyard, robin certainly. So that's what everybody does Shiluach HaKan on. That's what like the average person does Shiluach HaKan on when they just happen to you know, find it in their homes or in the street. So you can't eat a robin, because we don't have a Mesorah. So on the one hand, when it comes to trying to perform the mitzvah, we do, we make a point. To some degree, because no harm, no foul. We also don't make a bracha. We don't make a bracha for a number of reasons, but we don't make a bracha on Shiluach HaKan. But we assume that a robin is probably a kosher bird, and therefore I'm going to do Shiluach HaKan. I don't assume it's a kosher bird to the degree that I'm willing to eat it, though. I don't know that it would be very tasty, but so there is like some context in that, well, if it's not a bird of prey, it's probably kosher, but I'm not actually going to bring myself to eat it. I'm going to err on the side of caution. Similarly, when it comes to Shabbos, there are certain properties of food. When it comes to Kali Habishal, I'll give you an example, and this is what makes Shabbos particularly challenging, and the kula of Rav Moshe that we'll talk about in a minute. So interesting. Truth is, we might not get there until next week. But the idea of Kali Habishal, things that are very easily cooked, being inclusive of tea leaves. So if tea leaves are Kali Habishal, then that certainly means that they can't be placed into a klisheni. It may mean that they can't even be placed into a klishlishi, depending on who you ask. So let's just consider that for a second. What is it about tea leaves? What's the special property of tea leaves? Well, they're very small and they're very thin. They're generally dried, but meaning anything that is so thin and so small and so, you know, pliable. And yet we don't necessarily take that to the degree that, anything that's really small, you know, can very easily be cooked. Maybe yes, maybe no, but it at least gets us thinking along certain lines. Something that's chomrei habishal is like ox meat. I don't know that anybody really eats ox meat anymore, but it takes a great deal of cooking in order to properly cook ox meat. Even though we have like basic criteria, still trying to apply that to any actual foods becomes much more becomes much more difficult. Why don't we make a bracha on Shiluach HaKan? We don't make a bracha on Shiluach HaKan more, not because we don't know what bird is what, but more because it may be a mitzvah that by the time we're actually prepared, by the time we're actually prepared to perform the mitzvah, to fulfill the mitzvah, it's already gone. It's already gone because the bird may already have left, which is true of, that's true of perhaps anyway, some other mitzvahs. That's why that's some explain that that's the reason why you don't make a bracha, let's say on tzedakah. It's a little bit different, but the idea of tzedakah being that it is really tali biyad acherim, whether or not the person actually wants to accept money from me. So even if, let's say, somebody's asking for a handout, by the time I actually go there with the bill and put it in their hand, maybe they'll decide that they don't really want it anymore. Maybe why we don't make a bracha on kibud avaim. That even though it's true that my mother asked for her slippers, by the time I actually bring her slippers, eh, you know, it's fine, I put my shoes on. Or I just, like, I lost interest, I'm not interested anymore. So certain mitzvos, where there's a time lag between, let's say, the engaged activity and the actual fulfillment of that mitzvah, we may not make a bracha because we might actually be lacking the mitzvah. It could be that it goes unfulfilled by the time we're actually prepared to do so. Roa vedris are easily cooked. They may be easily cooked. They're not strictly considered to be mikalei habishul necessarily. We'll get to that list in a little bit, and that's going to be important for even for conversation about kli shlishi. Okay, so let's get to the end of this paragraph here with kli sheni, yotzim min haklal. Yotzim min haklal, so exceptions to the rule min haklal, is ahem hamayim v'hashemen v'hatavlin. Water and oil and tavlin, spices, seasoning, which doesn't necessarily mean what we commonly colloquially use it to mean. Meaning today's spices are not necessarily what the what halacha has in mind when it talks about tavlin. So first of all, so mayim, so water, we don't consider or we're not concerned needs to can still be cooked in a kli sheni. Water is something, shemen is something, water, oil are things that we assume need to be cooked specifically in a kli rishon, which is really interesting, right? Because when it comes to liquids, on the one hand, right, all that really needs to be done, you don't have to affect any kind of real substantive change in the liquid. You only have to bring it up to a certain temperature. You only have to bring it up to yad saledes in order for it to be considered cooked. Nevertheless, even though that's the case, and even though then you might actually be bringing that liquid up to Yad Soledes when you pour it into a kli sheni, we still consider it to not be an act of cooking. So if we're talking about irui from a kli rishon or putting water into a kli rishon, when we're talking about mixing hot and cold water like we were before, when we were dealing with an actual kli rishon, either pouring from a kli rishon or depositing into a kli rishon, that's where you have this conversation about water. But cold water into a kli sheni is no longer a problem. Sha'osa mutter litein b'kli sheni gam kishe'inam mivushalim. Water that's never been cooked before. So water, cold water, you want to put a splash of cold water into your coffee, and your coffee's in a klisheni, but your coffee is also yad saledes bo. It's still mutter to pour water into it. If you were so inclined and wanted to pour in a shot of olive oil, by all means, you could do that also. Shemen also can't be cooked in a klisheni, and tavlin. So again, so here you have like some context. Riff, going back to your question, it's very difficult to really piece this all together and to then have enough of a working mahalach to then be able to apply really to other individual foods. What we mean by tavlin, by the way, let's take a look at the actual footnote here. Okay. Kuf nun beis. Umahem hadavarim hanikra'im tavlin. What are the things that are considered to be spices in halachic terms? So shamati me'agon rosh lomo zalman arbach, shlita, we would say, zecher tzadik v'kadosh l'vracha. We're not talking about spices that we use. We're not like talking about pereg. We're not talking about things you pick up in the shuk. That they're there to flavor a cooked pot of food, a cooked dish. That's not what we're talking about. After all, and this is really a very, very important consideration, since they are ground very fine, kol shekein, all the more so, just the opposite, all the more so, Shehem Misbashlim Gam B'Klisheni. They're going to become cooked even in a Klisheni. So there are two things to recognize. Number one is that when the Gemara Mishnah spoke about Tavlin with respect to Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, we're necessarily speaking about the kinds of things that we use in the first place. We weren't speaking about onion powder. If they were going to incorporate onions into a dish, they would use onion. We weren't talking about garlic powder. If they were going to incorporate garlic into a dish, they would use garlic. And we weren't talking about, I don't know, even maybe, I don't even know, but like chili powder, paprika. I mean, you did start to have some of these things in the, you know, even in the ancient world, but primarily what comes up, certainly in the Gemara, when we speak about spices, take a look. Dakavana l'kinamon, zangvil, v'shemen. We're talking about cinnamon, zangvil is ginger, and shemen and oil. Pepper and peppercorns are on these kinds of lists as well. But the problem is, says the Shemir Shabbos Kilchasa here, is that first of all, even when we're talking about our version of these spices, they're not nearly as hardy as they once were because they're ground into a fine powder. Because they're ground into such a fine powder, actually starts to become much closer to something like tea leaves, where they could be cooked much more easily. The ayin, simin, shinir ches betaz, dibitzolim, kevin shem charifim, memarim lehizbashel. When it comes to onions cook even more quickly because it's almost like they're halfway there already. They're so acidic that all they need is to sort of be pushed over the edge and then they would be considered to be cooked as well. Quotes from the Ketosa Shulchan here, although this is sort of cut off. But also he talks about onion, talks about oil, talks about, chometz v'yayin, other things that Hashem d'dvam sh'ruim la'achil b'fnei atman. So he speaks about other things, maybe other things that you also might put into, let's say, a pot of soup or food or stock pot to be able to give something more flavor, infuse it with flavor, could go gezer. Let's say something like carrots, meaning when the Gemara speaks about, you know, what's chomrei habishul, or you know, what could not be cooked, let's say in a klisheni, our tavlinim, our spices, those are things that go only into a kli rishon. Those are things that are there to give something flavor while it's cooking. Doesn't necessarily refer to the sorts of things that we bizman hazem might put in. Who's to say that they necessarily did those things then, that they were taking, let's say, whole vegetables, you know, carrots and celery necessarily, and putting them and using them in as well, just for flavoring. Maybe yes, maybe no. But at any rate, what we call spices doesn't necessarily abide by this halachic criteria. Another thing to consider is that when we talk about, let's say, onion and paprika, onion powder, paprika, garlic powder, we should just be aware that the way that these things are produced is through dehydration. This is going to become important if we talk about salt, but it's through dehydration, not through any process of actual cooking or roasting. These things are dehydrated, very, very minimal heat, and then afterwards are not even necessarily brought up to Yad Soledes, and then afterwards they are ground. So you may well still have, you would certainly still have a bishul issue from the perspective of yesh bishul achar afia, which we spoke about a little bit last time. Even if you say that in the dehydration process, if let's say it's brought up to a point of yad soledes, still that would only be dry baking or dry roasting. That wouldn't really be actual bishul. And it seems that if it's just being dehydrated, hard to say necessarily that it's really being brought up to a temperature at which it would really be yad soledes. So it's probably not even cooked at all. So you just want to be very, very careful when adding what we call spices don't necessarily fall under this category. It looks like this is a little bit cut off. I may have to, you know what? Let me open up my actual sefer here. Just give me one second so I can read this in its entirety here. We're on, where is this? Nun Hey. Nun Hey. No. Where are we? One second here. Oh, this is really cut off. Yeah. Okay. This is terribly cut off because really there should be a whole mandalit here. Okay. So let me, my apologies. I'm going to kind of read this in my own sefer. I don't have it here up on the screen. It's got terribly cut off. Okay. And here is where we actually talk about salt. Some interesting things to share about this. Here's what Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa says. Not sure I can necessarily square this away with what with at least whatever research I was able to do, but here we go. Basher lemelach mikaven shekol melach shulchan v'gam melach bishol mizukak hi. So he speaks about both table salt and also cooking salt. It's all refined. So therefore, haridino kedin ha'devarim ha'muzkarim la'el b'seif memtes v'lahalon seif nunhei. He's referring back to memtes. That was the seif where we discussed all of those powders that dissolve in water. We were talking about sugar and we were talking about sweeteners and we were talking about all those things. So you put salt in the same category because salt also, he says, is refined. You're starting off with a liquid and it's being boiled and then you end up with salt. But if you're talking about, let's say, salt substitutes, not sure exactly what he's talking about, but other kinds of compounds and things. You have to certify exactly how it is that they're being made, how it is that they're being manufactured, because they're indeed manufactured in different ways. It could be that they were already cooked. It could be that they were never cooked. If they were never cooked, you'd have a significant bishul issue. If they were already cooked, then certainly you could add them into a kli sheni, just like sugar. So here is the story. The way that salt is produced, at least edible salt, is that some kind of briny solution, generally, you know, some kind of like naturally occurring salt water, whether an ocean or sea or even like saltwater lakes and things like that. The water is drawn into shallow pools once upon a time, and it's still in some places this is being done very, very naturally. It washes over into very shallow pools, and then they leave the brine, the solution, the salt water out there in the sun. Sun goes to work. The wind goes to work. The water evaporates, and what you're left with are salt crystals. So that is still what's being done, even in an industrial kind of setting. What happens there is that really we're relying upon evaporation. But what happens afterwards is that just in order to get it really, really dry is that even the remaining relatively dry salt is still taken, and then it's baked afterwards. So the problem is as follows. If it's being baked, what we then have on our hands is another situation, like I mentioned before, of afia, potentially bishul achar afia. So meaning to say the only time that salt is actually processed in manufacture, whereby it's cooked, is that it's not really being cooked, it's not really being boiled. It's not like you start off with a vat of salt water and it's actively being boiled at 212 degrees until all the water evaporates. And then what you're left with is just a little bit of salt beneath. What we have with salt is something else completely, where it's really a regular natural evaporation. And then when you get to the final end product, that's baked afterwards. That baking, it's not really that there is enough liquid left in that solution at that point, or left in the product at that point, to say that that's really an act of bishul, an act of boiling. That's really an act of afia, or an act of tzli. It's an act of dry roasting or of dry baking. So again, where does that leave us? What that means is that if we say that it's never really actually been cooked but only baked, I shouldn't really be permitted to put salt even into a kli sheni. So this becomes a major issue. Overwhelmingly, we end up with a lot of foods on our plate that are really directly from the kli in which they were cooked, and they're moist or they're wet, and then we salt these things. I saw an interesting psak from the OU about this. I believe it was quoting Rav Schechter directly, that in this instance, we could actually rely upon the opinion that yesh bit for a number of different factors, but that we could actually rely upon the opinion that says that ein bishul achar afia, specifically when it comes to salt, because once it's on a kli sheni, it might not really be able to be cooked anyway. And it could be one of these items that really falls under the category of tavlin anyway, of spices, and something that really needs to be in a kli rishon anyway to properly be cooked, even if it isn't actually cooked. So you have like a number of different, this happens every now and again, that what we come to expect as sort of baseline halacha is actually something of, it's like a chumra this way and a chumra that way. And once you have something of a confluence of those different chumras, sometimes that does leave open a pocket for potential kula. So like we mentioned last week, the idea of putting challah into your soup, but you can't put challah into your soup because that would be cooking it after it's only been baked. And with respect to baking, we still say that cooking is very much on the table. Yesh bishal acharafia. Okay, that is one thing to consider. It's a chumrah. We are machmir for that, but that's a chumrah. Another thing to consider is that maybe by the time we're actually in the bowl of soup, it's actually not a cliché, it's really a klishlishi, because the ladle that you used in order to get the soup from the soup pot into the bowl actually was the cliché. Soup bowl itself was a klishlishi. Okay, ordinarily, we wouldn't really hold that way, we'd ordinarily be machmir, but you put the two together, and then that becomes like a double chumrah, and that becomes unnecessary. So here too, it could be that salt really can't be cooked anyway in a kli sheni, even if you say that it can be cooked in a kli sheni, the salt that we use really at least has been baked before, since it's at least been baked before, to also be machmir, and to say yesh bishal acharfia, that all might just be a bit too much. That's the very, very interesting, worthwhile psak to be aware of from the OU. Is hot sauce cooked and is ketchup? Ketchup is cooked. Hot sauce is cooked as well. They're all cooked. The other thing, I believe anything that is, I don't know, this might not be true, but I believe this to be the case. That's probably easy enough to just find out a little Googling, but ketchup, yes, I'm pretty sure hot sauce may not be cooked. Let me get back to you. I'll do a little Googling on that. But ketchup, yes. I think that like anything that is shelf stable needs to have been cooked at some point. I'm just looking for one second. I'll try to get back to everybody about that next week. But you have these kinds of things, condiments and things like that, that become, here we go, hot sauce. Okay. You have these kinds of things, right? That we just like as a matter of course, we add to our food and like, oh, by the time it's already on the plate, but they are things to be cautious about, to be careful about. One thing about putting cold hot sauce into hot soup. Exactly, right? That would be, right. So if you're putting it into hot soup, whether or not it is, see, for hot sauce, whether or not it's cooked, right? You're still going to have a problem of yesh bishal achar bishal, right? The question is the soup really a kli sheni or is it a kli shlishi? So something to just be, even if it's only a kli sheni, meaning to say that if the hot sauce was already cooked, so it's true that we're careful about yesh bishal achar bishal, but still liquid that was already cooked, we do put into a kli sheni, right? Meaning like milk, which I think is going to be the next halacha here, one of the next halachas. Putting milk into a cup of coffee. Milk has already been cooked before when it was pasteurized, so it can be put into a kli sheni. All these other sugar, right? Sugar's already been cooked before, even though we treat sugar like it's a liquid because it started off as a liquid. So nevertheless, it's already been cooked before. It can be put into a kli sheni. You have many such things. Hot sauce, I'm not sure about. If hot sauce has already been cooked, then it's true that yesh bishal achar bishal, you could recook it conceptually, but that would only be true in a kli rishon, not in a kli sheni. Even if the soup is only a kli sheni and not a kli shlishi, it would still be mutter to put it back in. But it's a good question that I'm just not sure. On the one hand, I would say that yes, anything that's shelf stable, I think has to have been cooked, but I'm not sure that that's actually true, particularly with things that are so heavily vinegar based. So I'm just not sure. I'll try to let you know next time. Let's see. Okay. Let's, you know, and then, hey, this is going to be a little bit more involved. This is going to take a little bit more time. Let us hold it here. And we'll get back to Nunhag. Some of these things that we've already discussed about this very next sif is going to talk about milk. We've already discussed putting milk in, putting milk in a cup of coffee or a cup of hot tea if it's a cliché-ni, but getting into some more liquids that have already been cooked before are still being able to be put into a cliché-ni. And in Mitzvah Shem, next time we'll also move on. We'll start talking about a cliché-shlishi as well, get to Rav Moshe's kula about using a cliché-shlishi, making tea, things of that nature. Okay, thanks very, very much, everybody. Thanks for coming on tonight. Wishing everybody a good week and not too early. Wish everybody a good Shabbos as well.
Thank you.
Good night.
All the best.